You know, it doesn't cost anything to imagine a future or dream a future. On one of our holiday periods, we got magazines and we cut up magazines and each had a scrapbook. And we put images of what a future life would look like. And because you only think in terms of what's possible and what you've accomplished before. But it made a difference to be prompted by the others in the group. And that sort of expanded our vision.
That's Eve Grzybowski talking about how she and a group of friends decided to retire together in their dream home. And you're listening to
A Social Life.
A Social Life.
A Social Life with friends.
With friends.
With friends.
With friends.
A Social Life with friends.
I'm Madeline Dorr, and this podcast explores how we can better navigate the various relationships in our lives and deepen our connections. In this episode, I'm asking, how can we live well with other people? This question doesn't come with an easy answer. Many people are facing the very real challenges and impacts of a global affordable housing crisis. It can be disempowering to await legislation changes, to read news articles that say there's no end in sight, to hear anecdotes of people joining a line of hundreds just to see a room in a share house. So I'm under no illusions about an easy fix-all solution. But I do think that we can be inspired by creative approaches to this very crisis. For inspiration, I wanted to explore some of the most interesting approaches to living with others I've encountered recently. It's by no means an exhaustive list, but rather a starting point for dreaming. As Eve said, it costs nothing to dream. In her 70s, Eve now lives with a group of friends who are known as the Shedders. After their process of dreaming together, they then trialed communal living in a rental before building their dream home in New South Wales, Australia. I wanted to delve further into the details with Eve. How do they go about making a dream a reality?
We were practical. You know, we might have been dreamers in those early stages, but we really took each step very carefully and with a lot of communication around it. It wasn't going to work if we were out of communication with one couple or one individual, but just talking it through. We started meetings. There were many, many meetings, and had poster paper up and recorded our thoughts, and was very respectful, and it became something like a closer and closer shared vision of what we might do as the six of us in leaving Sydney and finding a property to live on.
Listening to Eve, I was curious, what makes it all work?
I think there's a potential for evolving. You have to have good communication skills. You have to be able to be organized and plan things. But we were all capable of that. And it was also a financial advantage. And you can imagine the ways that that works. If you live with a group of people, you probably only need one washing machine, even for three couples, or one or two refrigerators. You're sharing the costs of buying a house or building a house and so on. So that was pretty attractive too, especially as we know Sydney is a very expensive place to live if you want to live in a nice place.
Three couples living together is bound to have its challenges. So I asked Eve about how the Shedders have navigated stressful times over the years. Something that proved useful was to have a facilitator help with big decisions and tensions. Over the years, the most important thing has proved to be honesty.
Because we had these resources that we brought into relationship with the six of us, we knew that we could draw on those. And one of them, as simple as it sounds, is being honest and employing clear communication. And also acknowledging that we like each other. And so we had that as a basis, you know, like the base of the relationship was, we want this to work. And then we had the resources of the group. So if there was a confrontation with one person, then you might be have somebody in the group hold the space for you until you both could clear it up. And as we've been together longer, it seems like there's less personality conflicts. I think you just get to know people. You know what triggers people. And you don't have to avoid that, but you just have to bring kindness into the equation.
Ultimately, it's about commitment.
You know, it's not always easy being married to your husband or in partnership in a long-term relationship. But you can imagine what it's like having two other couples that you're in a long-term relationship, a committed relationship with. So the reason that I committed to Daniel, my husband, is that I thought it would enrich my life to have that commitment and that relationship. And I think that of the six of us.
As things have been ironed out, it's opened up space for less judgment and more connection.
I feel like the more that I've gotten to know the other people in our group, that I've come to appreciate and love them more and be able to see them with less judgments. So that's a really good practice to have, I think, generally in life. And they've been my practicing ground for that. And I think it's easier to get through life if you're not judging people to that degree that I was in the beginning. And, you know, we had to develop more and more trust of each other. And I think that's another thing that's come to me, is feeling loved and seen and held in this special group.
Eve would say that the experience of living together has been better than expected. Besides the financial benefits, it's led to many of the people in the house pursuing things like postgraduate studies or new qualifications that they otherwise wouldn't have. It's also introduced more flexibility into their lifestyles for things like travel, as the house can be cared for by the others.
One question people will ask is, you know, has it turned out the way that you thought it would? I think that it's turned out better, I think we would all say that, than we expected, and differently. So that's a really good thing when you're in your 60s, 70s, now one of us has turned 80, that life is still a bit of an adventure. But it's not over. And we're committed to each other and supporting each other, but life can get quite a bit harder as you get older, more frail, more infirm. It hasn't turned out completely yet, but we're on course. You know, I think we've got each other's backs, and you know that there's support in the group, and that's been proven a few times.
Eve said that the experience is different to when she was in a share house in her 20s and 30s because the level of commitment is greater. But that said, there are examples of how such benefits of co-living can be cultivated at any stage in our lives. I spoke to the food writer and supper club host, Rosie Kellett, who went viral on TikTok and Instagram when she shared a peep into her London share house.
I live communally with six other people, which means that we all share food and one person cooks dinner for everybody else at least one night of the week. We spend £25 a week on our food shop each, and that buys all the food, cleaning materials, bin bags, kitchen roll, toothpaste, you name it, for the whole house.
Before we dive into burning questions about budgeting, house responsibilities, and logistics, I was keen to hear how you go about finding such a house.
And I lived in so many different share houses of varying degrees of niceness, mostly pretty grim. and the kitchens were never great, but, you know, no one shared food or cooking. It was like everyone had their shelf in the fridge, everyone had their cupboard, and everyone had their version of everything. But moving into this warehouse was like, I was looking for a room, I would say, for about 3 months. I was really desperate for somewhere to live, but I literally got to the warehouse, I'd gone lost, someone had helped me find it, and then I went to the kitchen and there was like, you know, about 10 people around the kitchen table, because at that point there were more people living there. And, you know, I got properly like grilled. It was like a proper interview, and they described how they lived and the food and the cooking thing. And they kind of were like, look, you've got to be on board with this if you want to live here, because that's how we do things. And, you know, you can't really live here unless you're interested in doing the same things. But I was literally sitting there going like, oh my God, this is ideal. And I'm so excited about it. And I've got to try and be cool and not look like an absolute maniac, but also like let them know how excited that makes me. And then as soon as I moved in, it was just like changed the whole way I thought about living in London. And I felt far safer and had a bigger community. And just the very nature of knowing that there's always going to be a meal for you at home, I think gives you a real sort of feeling of home and family and being grounded and safety. And
I was keen to delve into the day-to-day logistics of living with 6 other people. Alongside the cooking roster, Rosie explained that the cleaning gets done between everyone, and then there are specific roles to keep various parts of the house running smoothly.
We have the person who does the weekly food shop. It's generally Pierre. So then secondary to the shopping, he also is in charge of the kitty, which is like a bank account that we have that all the money is sent to for our weekly shop. And so if someone is away on holiday, Pierre will either refund them a few of their days, like if they're away, he'll refund them for however many days they're away. And then he just obviously has to make sure that the shopping is still within the budget. That's Pierre. Then we have our DIY handywoman, Bea. And she takes care of like anything that needs fixing in the house. So this week she was like changing the kitchen cabinet doors because they were all gross and old. She's very practical and skilled and brilliant. So she does that. And then we have Virginia and Tom, and they do all of our recycling, which sounds like a small job, but it's not because there's so many of us. And then we have 2 laundry maidens, and they basically do all of the the communal laundry. So they're not doing anyone's clothes, but they're basically making sure that all of the tea towels, dishcloths, shower mats and hand towels, so anything from the bathroom or the kitchen, are kept clean and changed out and folded and dried and put back. And so they keep that kind of cycle going. And then I'm the fridge defender, which means that I clean out the fridge once a week and basically reorganize. I try and keep it really organized with like all of the dairy on a shelf and all of the condiments on a shelf and all of the meat and fish on a shelf. But that kind of loses its, it gets loose throughout the week. So it always needs like a refresh. And then I'll throw anything that's a bit old and take everything out and clean the fridge and put everything back in. And yeah. That I think that's everybody.
I also wondered about communication. For some people, maybe a share house might conjure memories of passive-aggressive post-it notes, but Rosie assured me there's other ways to communicate with a large group of people.
The post-it note thing is a very poisonous little habit, I think, that is born of living unhappily. I've lived in flat shares before where I've been so unhappy with the way other people are treating the space, and I didn't feel comfortable to like verbalize it to them. So to be quite honest, I probably just like swallowed that and let it fester inside of me. But in where we live now, I just think we're so practiced at having these conversations. We know each other really well and we all trust each other and we're very good friends. So that's a good baseline, I think. I would also like to just sort of shout out therapy, because I think I've done quite a lot of therapy. I've done about two or three years. It's not loads actually, but I'm quite practiced at that way of speaking. And I think if you learn how to give someone feedback without necessarily feeling like they're being attacked, and then you also learn how to like respond to someone if they're being defensive, there's very few bad ways a conversation like that can go. And it's probably more about just practicing how to verbalize that kind of thing to someone without, you know, upsetting them or hurting their feelings or making them feel attacked. And yeah, in my experience, we've never had There's never been a falling out about that kind of thing. It's generally quite funny. Like in a house meeting, if someone's like, there has been like a few occasions in house meetings where someone's been like, okay, the bathroom, like somebody is like not being careful enough when they're going to the bathroom. And I just need you all to like pick up on that and like be better. And it's like hilarious, you know, because like no one knows. I don't know. It's just, it's generally funnier, I think, if people are upfront and honest and kind in their delivery.
As an introvert, personally, I also wondered about alone time in such a social and communal house. But it turns out everyone respects the need for solitude, and they've even created their own term for it.
In our warehouse, we all have varying degrees of, you know, a deep need for solitude. And we call it caving. We're just like, generally, it's like, where's Rosie? She's caving. And it's like, whoever that is that needs a bit of time, quite honestly, could like take their food to their bedroom and eat dinner in there if they didn't fancy sitting around the kitchen table and like being, you know, chatty. Because I think that that is the thing, is that there are so many benefits to living in a big house with lots of people, that, you know, when you are living in community and they are like, they're not just your housemates, there's so many benefits. But one of the things I think that can, you know, add to being tired is coming home from a very busy day to more socializing. It can sometimes feel like coming home to a social thing. And, you know, 9 times out of 10, that's great. But there are those days where you just actually can't socialize anymore. And I think our house have gotten really good at just, personally for ourselves, like for myself, I feel absolutely no shame or worry about just going to my bedroom and not talking to anyone and then going to bed and seeing them all the next day. And I do that whenever I need to, and all my housemates do as well.
When speaking with Rosie, I couldn't help but think how idyllic this living situation is. Communal dinners that look gorgeous on Instagram, clear communication, a sense of community, but also space for solitude. I wondered if it's possible for something to be as good as the highlight reel appears.
Yeah, I'd say like 80% of the time, it feels like you're living the dream, and it really is as good as it looks. Because, you know, we are all really tight, and I think this wouldn't be quite the same unless a lot of the people in the house deeply valued great food. But another of my housemates is a chef. And then Virginia, who I run, we run our supper club together. She's Italian and is completely obsessed with food. And so are my other housemates. And it's if we had like a totem pole of priorities in our house, I'm pretty sure food would be the top one. So I think that adds to it. And then I would also say that, you know, as we all know, social media is a sort of highlights reel of real life. And in reality, those big feasts that we're having are not every week. They're like special occasions, and, you know, they're planned, and it's not like they're just sort of happening left, right, and center. So yeah, they're completely wonderful when we have them, but they're not all the time. And I have spent the sort of first half of 2022, yeah, I was incredibly unhappy. I was coming out of a really difficult relationship, and I was really, really struggling. And I didn't feel like I was living in a wonderland. I was like completely broke. We weren't doing as many massive dinners, because I think I'm often one of the people that kind of like starts the plan for those. And I don't think I was really in a headspace to do that at that point. And I was very unhappy. But what I will say is that what got me through that period of unhappiness was the community in the warehouse, and they took great care of me and almost kind of nursed me back to myself through friendship and care and being there for me, and, you know, us having delicious, wonderful food. And I just think, yeah, it basically is as wonderful as it looks. But I think you can still be desperately unhappy and live in a wonderful house with great friends and a great community. I don't think it necessarily means you're always going to be personally very happy. But yeah, it is a wonderland, I'm afraid.
It's not the narrative we hear often, that this kind of living can be a wonderland. In fact, society tends to push us towards being more insular and individual and separate.
Society at the moment really does encourage you to live on your own, or like to be a unit and be a kind of like singular being. like I saw some really depressing TikTok that was like the perfect consumer is someone who lives alone. And I just think that is subliminally hammered into us all the fucking time. So I think it is not the, it's not everyone's natural instinct to share everything and to live in this very kind of trusting way.
Of course, co-living isn't for everyone and it doesn't need to be. But I think this example is really about showing us that we can have different frames for how we can live together. And I think it's inspiring to collect these different approaches and solutions.
I hope so. I really do. I think where we found ourselves, I don't know how things are in Australia, but in London right now, rent is impossibly expensive. And finding somewhere to live is just a, like a living nightmare. And there doesn't really appear to be any, you know, comfortable, affordable housing available right now. And I think it's bleak out there. So this feels like a real antidote to that and a kind of rebellion to that. And I think if more people can find spaces where they can live with their friends and can live in a more communal way and share more, then the world will benefit. And yeah, I wholeheartedly encourage people to live their lives a bit more. Like, you don't even necessarily need to move into a massive warehouse and live with seven people, but just taking this sort of like feeling of communality and sharing and generosity into your life is just like the most, for me anyway, it's been the most positive thing I think I've ever done. So yeah, I highly recommend.
So if a big share house with communal dinners isn't your thing, what then? I was inspired by the story of my friend Viraj. Balancing full-time studies and recovering from a major operation, he was looking for a more sustainable living situation, that is, something more affordable. After going through hundreds of ads and several dozen, if not more, viewings, with no luck, he eventually came across an ad to live with Anthea, a 90-year-old widow and retired artist.
It was really amazing because as soon as I stepped foot into the place for the first time to come and have a look, and I met Anthea, it just felt, it felt like a home. It wasn't just, you know, a bedroom or a space that you share amongst all these people. It's an entire house, one that's been lived in and has all these wonderful memories.
What I love about this pairing of Viraj and Anthea is that it can address both the loneliness crisis and the affordable housing crisis. Viraj speaks to how it's been mutually beneficial for the two of them.
You know, we kind of help each other out with various things. If we fancy a chat, we'll do that. We'll have cups of tea or we'll be in the garden. Anthea might need help moving some things because obviously she's 90 years old. She shouldn't be having to do this by herself. And even though she's more than capable, I am more than happy to help her with anything. So sometimes she needs a hand with technical things on her computer or her phone or her iPad, even though she's very savvy. Certain things can she might struggle with, so I kind of just help her with that.
The arrangement is a creative one, but I think a very much needed one, and it's something that Viraj would absolutely encourage.
I would say, you know, if you get along with the person that you might be sharing with in this type of arrangement, then definitely go for it. I think it's like living with a friend. And we're really similar in that regard as well. We like our own space just as much as we like spending time with people. And I've always felt that I've been able to kind of find a reasonably good balance with that. But Anthea's found this incredible balance from like of being able to do that. And I've learned a lot from how she lives and goes about her day to day that I've been trying to implement into my kind of everyday. And I've just learned so much from her. I just think she's wonderful. So my advice would be like, you know, meet these people. And if there's just that natural kind of connection there, whether it be an ease of communication, if the transparency is there as well, chances are it will end up being a really great thing.
I think if there's a connecting thread between the story of Eve, Rosie, Viraj and Anthea, it's that by living with other people, we actually become more of ourselves. Returning to Eve, she's found this to be true with her and the shedders.
The smallness of an ego becomes less important. And so I think that's what's falling away and getting chipped off is the constraints of your own ego. And when that happens, then you're just more of yourself. You can be more of yourself. It's like fertile soil. I feel more like I've been able to blossom in that environment and be more myself, and then allow the others in the group to be themselves.
Thanks for listening to A Social Life with Friends. If you'd like to have a summary of this episode, you can head to asociallifewithfriends.com to become a paid supporter of the podcast and receive bonus notes and links. Of course, you can always sign up to the newsletter for free to receive notifications of future episodes and show your support by subscribing to the podcast wherever you like to listen. Speaking of insular things, sometimes podcasting can feel a little bit like speaking into the void, so I'd love it if you leave a positive review to let me know that you're enjoying the episodes, and maybe it's a perfect thing to share with a friend and bring a bit of connection to your day too. We started this episode talking about dreaming, and while I know there's no easy way to address this very real stress many people are facing, what each of us can do as we navigate things like the housing crisis, the loneliness epidemic, is be a friend. As Henry David Thoreau said, friends, they cherish one another's hopes. They are kind to one another's dreams. We can give each other that. Don't be afraid to have your own dreams, to dream with your friends, and to encourage theirs.